Blog Talk Radio.
I hate you both. I've hated you ever since I can remember. I hate you, and I wish you both had cancer.
Cancer?
Yes, in the head.
I'm as tired as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Are you telling me you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
That's hot.
Hello there, children.
Hey, kids.
People seem to like me because I am polite and I'm rarely late.
And now the host of the Stupid Cancer Show, Matthew Zachary.
Monday, September 28th, and we are once again live on the Stupid Cancer Show, the voice of young adults with cancer. We are your friendly neighborhood weekly social webcast, finally giving that voice to nearly 5 million young adults affected by cancer. Got cancer under 40? Sucks, huh? Well, get busy living, because the Stupid Cancer Show is on the air. Welcome to tonight's broadcast, my friends, because we're here to change the world one chemo infusion at a time and share all of our collective crapness. This broadcast is a program of the I'm Too Young for This Cancer Foundation, one of the nation's leading grassroots advocates for the next generation of survivors and caregivers. It's all about us, and we're bringing the cause of cancer under 40 to the national spotlight and sticking it to the system that's ignored us for way too long. The past 3 decades of cancer progress have failed the next generation, so there's no reason to think the next 30 will be any different unless change happens right here, right now. So join us and be the change that we'd like to see happen. Hell, we invented Google, Facebook, Twitter, and kept saying giant on American Idol all those weeks. We can do anything we want. This is Generation Cancer. It is our fight. It is our duty to give back to our own generation. We have the sheer numbers, the voting power, and the influence to change the rules. Because remission is not an excuse for a cure, and survivorship is all that matters. Last week's show, September 21st, singles with Stupid Cancer Survivor Spotlight, Landon Dunning, young adult survivor, ovarian cancer, singer, songwriter, and contributing artist to I2Y Benefits TV Volume 2. Julie Larson, young adult program coordinator at Cancer Care. Tracy Maxwell, young adult survivor, ovarian cancer, and executive director of Hazing Prevention. Tonight's show, legislate this. I messed that up. I want to say with a Brooklyn accent. Legislate this. That wasn't good either. Ann Willis, young adult survivor Ewing sarcoma, manager of survivorship programs at the National Coalition for Cancer Survivorship. Duncan Cross, healthcare blogger. Molly Daniels, vice president for field advocacy for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. Alrighty, so hello and welcome to yet another fun-filling, exciting run through the hay on tonight's Stupid Cancer Show, and a Stupid Cancer welcome to all of our first-time listeners here on the Blog Talk Radio Network, coming at you live from the Chemo Deck, our fabulous studio in downtown Manhattan. I'm your host, Matthew Zachary, a 13-year young adult pediatric brain cancer survivor. Joining me live in the studio tonight, as always, our chief cancer anarchist, Jack Buffard. Hello, Jack.
What's up, Matthew? How you doing?
I am fabulous. Jack will be monitoring our live concurrent interactive chat room. So if you have something to say, let him have it and grill him with simple questions and stump his small brain with third grade arithmetic.
Third grade anything.
Third grade anything.
That's except true. Jokes and potty humor.
Exactly.
That I get.
Got it. We actually don't have any live studio audience members here tonight. We were going to have a brand new i2wire, who I know is listening tonight. Her name is Laura Otis.
Yes.
And Laura recently discovered i2y. She is a recent survivor of ovarian, cervical, breast, everything.
Cancer?
Everything. Recent survivor of cancer.
She's a total rock star.
And she went to the Stupid Cancer Happy Hour here in New York and met our team and fell in love. And today's her birthday, so we want to wish her a happy birthday.
Happy birthday, you thing from another world, you.
There we go.
Calm down, Porky.
So happy birthday, Laura Otis. Sorry you couldn't be here tonight. You're in the hospital. We're sending you our best.
She's in the hospital, and, you know, I have good news and I have bad news regarding Laura.
Okay.
The good news is that she's turning 30 today.
Woo!
The bad news is she spent it in the hospital. She had 103-degree fever.
All right, well.
But I was visiting her. I guess that would be the bad news for her birthday, too, is that she spent the day with me hanging around her hospital room. But she's in good spirits, and she's going to be okay. And, Laura, just hang in there, and we'll celebrate your unbirthday the other 364 days out of the year.
Speaking of unbirthdays, it's Carol's unbirthday. So, as always, it is my esteemed pleasure to introduce my official partner in crime here on the Stupid Cancer Show, hailing from the Windy City of Chicago, but in Pittsburgh tonight, fellow young adult survivor, author of the acclaimed book Everything Changes, The Insider's Guide to Cancer in Your 20s and 30s, the lovely, talented, blogtastic, and spectacular, the one and only Carol Rosenthal.
Hello.
So I realize that you're in Pittsburgh for Yom Kippur with your family, but I thought it would be much cooler if you lied to me and said that you were cleaning up after the G20 summit.
Oh, yeah. It would have been much cleaning up after the G20 summit?
Well, you know, shaking hands, getting business cards, convincing France to, like, you know, do stuff for us.
I just had bagels and whitefish salad. I don't know what could beat that.
I'm sorry, what?
Bagels and whitefish salad.
Yeah, Jack, get with the Jewish program.
Oh.
Yeah, everybody spent the day.
You guys still have corned beef and cabbage?
We have corned beef and pastrami.
No, that's when my family celebrates Christmas. You know, that's the Rosenthal Christmas celebration. Everybody fasted for the day except for me, of course. I just stayed home and cooked for everybody who was fasting. So everybody's downstairs pigging out on bagels and plum cake, and I'm joining you all.
What loyalty, I have to say. What absolute loyalty.
I'm joining you, too.
You hear that, people? Carol is giving up her Jewishness and Jewish food and gribbiness and guilt to be here for you.
You know
tonight.
What, Carol? You inspired me. I'm going to give up my Jewishness, too.
Well, you know, it's really my mom. It's my mom's doing. Because I said, Mom, you know, I've got the Stupid Cancer Show on Monday nights, but I'm going to come to Pittsburgh and celebrate Yom Kippur, and I'm going to skip the night. And she said, what are you guys talking about? And I said, we're talking about health care reform. She said, you're not skipping that show. You're going to march upstairs and do that health care reform show. This is too important.
So it's like reverse guilt.
Exactly.
Is that something that goes on in the Jewish community, guilt?
Well, you're Irish, right? You're not Italian.
No, so. We just drink our problems.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't acknowledge them. We just drink to them.
Well, happy Yom Kippur, Carol.
Thank you. You too.
Zayt Kazin, good Yontif. What else do they say? No, Shana Tova was last week.
Yeah. That's about it.
So I have to regale everybody with my trip to Canada.
Do tell.
Eh?
Exactly. I went to Ottawa this week, which I now understand is spelled O-T-T-A-W-A, not O-T-T.
Oh, wait, that's the wrong O thing.
O-W-A. And it was actually, it's a beautiful city. It's very old. It's got a lot of modern buildings juxtaposed against like these, like 17th century French castles. It's really an interesting city. The weather was good. I stayed at the Westin, which was like this, it was like an anachronism. It didn't belong there. It was like too modern compared to the backdrop of the city. But I was there for the first annual Go Public Cancer Prevention Summit I'm messing that up. They're going to hate me. But it was all about...
You were at the G19 summit.
I was at the, the G19 summit.
You came up a dollar short.
I did. And there were a lot of key stakeholders there, a lot of good players there. But I think overall I got to meet a whole host of young adult survivors from Canada and get their perspective on how ridiculous our country is in their mind, how healthcare really is in their country, and what we can do as a collective movement here in the States to raise more awareness for our age group up there. And then I went to Montreal for a day and actually met with five incredible young adult survivors who run a advocacy group called Hope and Cope. And everyone works with a group called Young Adult Cancer Canada, which is formerly Real Time Cancer, helmed by the extremely tall Jeff Eaton, who is, well, he's just that, he's extremely tall. But Jeff Eaton is the rock star young adult of Canada. And anyway, that was my trip. I had this dish called poutine, if anyone's ever heard of that. It sounds
dirty. That sounds very close to something that I got my mouth washed out with soap.
I know.
For saying once.
It's P-O-U-T-I-N-E, poutine.
That's not how I would have spelled it.
I know. And poutine is, it's like French fries with cheese curds and beef gravy in like a bucket.
That sounds disgusting. They put it in a bucket so you can vomit on top of it?
I got to tell you something, though. It's quite extraordinary. Because when I put on my Facebook status that I'm going to Canada, like 14 people are like, do this, eat this, go here. So I tried to do as much as I could. What I didn't do, and I'm glad that I didn't do it, they have this – Jack's going to start throwing up in his mouth now. They have something called a – can't even
– called a – do you want me to not look at you?
I can't even say. It's called a beaver tail.
Yum.
Anyone in the chat ever heard of a beaver tail?
I like those. I enjoy those separately.
Beaver tail is like this sort of pastry. It's like a lobster tail in a pastry shop here. We got to do all these strange.
I can't even look at the chat room right now.
It's a beaver. It's like this long pastry, which is covered in like sugar and stuff, and it's actually very delicious. I didn't get a chance to have one, but I passed a little boutique restaurant called Beaver Tail, and the line was out the door.
I am so glad
you didn't take
FCC
a picture of.
Does not regulate this show.
What?
I'm so glad that the FCC does not regulate this.
No, we got the WTF regulating this show.
Right.
So you passed Beaver Tail. You did not take a picture and tag Lowney as the sign.
I ate poutine, but I didn't eat Beaver Tail. So there you go.
That's something you can't say 10 times.
God
fast.
Bless Canada. But I will tell one thing, and we can talk about this really quickly to you. I did a poll on Facebook a couple of days ago, basically. Can someone please give me the real scoop on whether your healthcare system is great or it sucks? And 20 people left comments, and 10 were nice and 10 were not. So I was in Canada, and I just decided to ask people, tell me the truth. And apparently when you actually have an emergency situation, it's very good. But if you're just looking for, like, palliative care, like you're not feeling well, but you just want to get, like, an X-ray or something, that could take a couple of weeks. But if you have cancer, they take you right away, and the care is pretty good.
How convenient.
I know. So I'm not quite sure if that's accurate or not. We should totally do a show next season all about Canada and really get some people on the show that can give us the lowdown on this. What's up, Jack?
Do you know by any chance if they have any success with early detection compared to all of us stage 4 people?
That's a good question. I think it also comes down to this notion of palliative care. If you just want a general checkup, if you just want to go in for some blood work, if you're just looking to keep yourself, you know, in a good state or something hurts, it could take a few weeks to get that appointment. But that's because it's free and everyone is taking better care of themselves. So there's more of an awareness, apparently, of living a healthy lifestyle. So people want to get checked up on things. They don't ignore symptoms nearly as much, as far as I'm to understand. So the backup is because it's a good system. If there was no backup, it would mean no one was caring about their health and everything was only acute care like in this country.
Well, I can't tell you how many emails I get from folks who have read my book, Young Cancer Patients, who email me from Canada giving me their condolences because they read in my book about all of these young adults who are dealing, I mean, everybody interviews in the United States, and so they're like, oh, my God. They're not sorry that I had cancer. They're sorry that I live here. I had no idea. I'm so sorry that you have to go through that in the United States. They're like, it's just totally different. So, yeah.
I mean,
we should have a show comparing. You know?
Yeah, I mean, and again, even after the Facebook poll and the people that I spoke with in Canada, and this was a whole big cancer health summit in Canada, I'm talking to doctors, and everyone's telling me a different story, and I can't really formulate an objective opinion on whether it's better or for worse. But the one part that I did understand, which made sense to me, is that in Canada, it's not socialist. You can basically buy into a higher system and see doctors more urgently if you pay for it. So it's better than what we have here because at least there's something if you can't afford it. But if you can afford it, you can opt into something which will get you into care more effectively.
And I think that we should also, I mean, the examples that I'm setting and the examples that you're setting are anecdotal. And so I think it would be great if we looked, too, at, you know, what does the statistics show? What about quantifiable data? And what does that reveal about mortality rates and life expectancy rates and how people, you know, are handled?
Right. I'd also be curious to know what the statistics are, you know, population adjusted based on ratio. Are more people sick in Canada or are less people sick in Canada? I will tell you this one quick thing. I went out for breakfast in Montreal with this crew, and we went to this – it was sort of like a Denny's, but it wasn't like a Denny's. Because you say Denny's, you think like disgusting food. It was like a chain restaurant.
Waffle House?
Yeah. Le Waffle House.
Oh, it's actually Le Crepe House.
Le Crepe House. No, it really was like a crepe Denny's. But every single thing on the menu came with a whole bunch of fruit. There were no, like, French fries. There were no home fries. Everything
there was
just
a bucket of gravy and fried cheese curds, right?
And Tabasco sauce.
Well, I think you go across the street and get your poutine, but if you really want to have a healthy breakfast, like, it was just like, and this wasn't like a healthy, it wasn't billed as like a health food or a healthy place. I just think by natural culture, there's less of a, you know, an impetus to have fried things with everything you eat. Like the fruit, it's just like fruit came with everything by default. I found that very intriguing.
It's interesting that it doesn't carry down here.
No. You have to ask for fruit down here. It costs you money. There up there, it's free.
It comes out of a can. No, not up there. I'm saying like you get like a fruit salad at some diners and stuff and it's that like, I don't know what it is, but it's got, like, that sugar juice that's all over it.
All right. Well, let's breeze through the news here and get to Ann so we can kick off this amazing show. I know Carol and I are, like, absolutely stoked to have these conversations. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
I'm excited. Ann's great.
All right. Let's kick off the news.
Hello,
here.
Hello, I'm Kent Brockman, and this is Eye on Cancer.
Just the facts, ma'am.
Okay, during this part of the show, we announce worthy news stories to our adoring listeners to let them know all about the latest and greatest in free young adult programs, services, events, projects, and stuff. If you have an upcoming program, service, event, project, conference, or stuff that you'd like to hear broadcast during this part of the show, please fax it to us at 646-861-2565 or email Jack at jack@i2y.com. Take it away, bro.
Thank you, Matthew. Here's your stupid cancer news. Everyone should head on over to events.i2y.com to see what's going on in your area. We have stupid cancer happy hour scheduled in Connecticut. I'm going to that tomorrow night, September 29th in Hartford. We have the New York City Metro chapter hosting an Apple Festival on October 4th. We have Stupid Cancer Happy Hours in Philadelphia, October 13th, in North Carolina on October 20th, and back to New York City on October 31st, we are hosting our Halloween Scaretacular. So head on over to events.i2y.com and check out the latest and greatest i2y events in your area. I'm going to read Carol's book second after the events because I neglected to plug her book last week, and Carol, I apologize for that.
Go for it.
Everything Changes, The Insider's Guide to Cancer in Your 20s and 30s, written by our very own Stupid Cancer co-host, Carol Rosenthal. Everything Changes is available wherever books are sold, and you can check out the book's website at everythingchangesbook.com. 70k.org, that's the letter, I'm sorry, that's the word 70, the letter k.org. There are approximately 70,000 people aged 15 to 39 diagnosed with cancer every year. Sign this petition and show your support for the young adult cancer community and establish 70k.org as the adolescent and young adult cancer bill of rights to be established as a standard for care to meet the needs of this underserved population that we all belong to. Are you a young adult survivor living in Rhode Island or southeastern Massachusetts who would like to begin an exercise program? If so, check out Survivor Step Into Motion by contacting Santina Horowitz at area code 401-793-8124, or you can email Santina shorowitz at lifespan.org. Friday, October 16th in Cleveland, Ohio. Rise Above It is hosting a symposium and a fundraiser, a black tie fundraiser. For more information, head on over to www.raibenefit.org. Can't Make a Dream is hosting their Women's Cancer Retreat October 8th through the 11th. And stay tuned to campdream.org for the 2010 retreat schedule for all of their programs. Planet Cancer is hosting their 18 to 25-year-old retreat October 23rd through October 25th in Boston, Massachusetts. This retreat is free of charge and open to anyone who has ever had or has cancer, and you only have to participate as much as you want to. Visit planetcancer.org for more information. The 12th International Thyroid Cancer Survivors Conference is being held in Boston, Massachusetts, October 16th through the 18th. Anybody whose life has been touched by thyroid cancer is encouraged to attend. For more information and to register, go to www.thycathyca.org, or you can call 877-588-7904. Visual Diaries, a snapshot of the young adult cancer experience, is being hosted by our lovely friends at Cancer Care. Wednesday, September 30th, and Thursday, October 1st, from 6 to 9 in the West Chelsea Arts Building in New York, New York. Tickets are $25 a person, $30 at the door, and include a wine and cheese reception. Head on over to cancercare.org for more information. And finally, we have Live On, Sperm Banking by Mail. If you are a male, newly diagnosed, and need a Live-On kit for sperm banking before you start your treatment, head on over to liveonkit.com. Live Sperm Banking by Mail is made possible by our great friends at Fertile Hope. And that, my friends, is your Stupid Cancer News.
All righty. Okay, my first guest recently marked her 12th cancerversary of her diagnosis of Ewing sarcoma. She did a stint at the National Cancer Institute and is currently director of survivorship programs for the National Coalition for Cancer Survivorship. She also participates on the Live Strong Young Adult Alliance and sits on the board of directors for the Omen Cancer Fund for Young Adults. I've known her for quite some time now. She's remarkable. The one and only. We love her to death. Please welcome Ann Willis. Hi, Ann. Hello, Ann.
Hello. Thank you.
Happy Cancerversary.
Thank you.
12 years, huh?
Yeah, I can't believe it's been that long.
No, I'm just a rookie compared to you and Matt.
Yeah,
yep.
we own you.
Well, Ann does.
Ann owns you. So you're a returning champion, but just for the, you know, for our loving listeners here, you're diagnosed with Ewing sarcoma. How old were you?
I was 15 at the time.
Wow. Yeah, I will let you know this. My mother-in-law is listening to the show because my brother-in-law was diagnosed with Ewing sarcoma at 13, and he passed away in 2003. but she's really fascinated to hear your story because it's so uncommon of a cancer. So can you talk us through those first couple of months?
Yeah, so...
no pressure.
What was that?
No pressure.
I had a tumor on the back of my head. I found it when I was washing my hair. And, you know, nobody thought it was anything. I went to the doctor, another couple months later for something totally unrelated, had it biopsied, and found out that it was cancer. I ended up having a rough time. You know, being 15 is really hard. Add a little cancer diagnosis to that, makes things a little bit harder. So I ended up having about 14 months of chemo. I had radiation, a couple surgeries, and here I am.
And back in 1998, I was diagnosed in 95. Life was a whole lot different back then for us.
Yep.
And you've basically seen the surge of young adult conversation and advocacy, you know, birth over the last, you know, 10 years or so. I was really happy to see that you moved over from NCI to the National Coalition for Cancer Survivorship, because I love that organization, but I really felt that they needed an infusion of youth. And can you talk a little about what NCCS does and how your fabulousness has pushed along different agendas?
Sure. Well, just to hit on something you mentioned before, back when I was diagnosed, there was nothing for young adults. I was treated at a pediatric center. I was the oldest person there. And then I was also treated by a private oncologist, and I was the youngest person there. So I'm very excited to give back to the community. NCCS, the organization, advocates for quality cancer care for all Americans, doesn't matter the type of cancer. And being in my position, I've been able to participate on the Young Adult Alliance, and I've also worked with the Ullman Cancer Fund for Young Adults, and so I've been very fortunate to work with a great group of people. Specifically at NCCS, our focus right now is around the idea of care planning, especially for young adults. I think this topic is really important. I'll focus on the post-treatment part just for now, but, you know, once you finish with treatment, I don't know what your experience was, Matthew, but my experience was that the doctor basically said, all right, we'll see you later, and there was no plan for my follow-up care. And so right now my organization works through many different avenues to help ensure that care is coordinated from the moment of diagnosis throughout the end of life. And so it's something that's really important to all young adults with cancer, because there are issues that come up after treatment, and we tend to live longer with those issues. So,
yeah, I went through pretty much the same thing. It was like, you know, go home, enjoy your life, and and that was it. What hospital were you treated at, by the way?
I was originally treated at Texas Children's Hospital in Houston, and then, like I said, I went to a private oncologist about halfway through my treatment.
Yeah, because I was 21, you were 15, but, you know, I was still treated in pediatrics as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost interesting, you and I have a sort of a flip side perspective on the young adult issue, because most of the time it's, you know, I have cancer, I'm 25 years old, and I'm in a room with, like, geriatrics.
Uh-huh.
We were in a room with little kids and squeaky toys.
Yep.
Yeah, so...
Yep.
So,
yeah, and the hospital would have, you know, programs for the kids to get together, but I was always the oldest one, and it was very weird, very awkward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, I was one of the first adults that my pediatric oncologists ever spoke to. They were so used to talking to parents of 4-year-olds. It was a bit of a social experiment. Now, one of the things I like about NCCS, and for the record, NCCS was the very first cancer advocacy organization I ever got involved with in 2001. And I have to thank Craig Lustig for introducing me to Stacia Grosso way back when I had a little more hair on my head. And
what was that?
That was ages and ages ago. And Ellen has really steered that organization so steadfastly. Can you talk really quickly about the Cancer Survivorship Toolkit that you guys put out there?
Sure. So the Cancer Survival Toolbox is an awesome resource. It's free. You can download it on our website, or you can actually get it on iTunes as well. And basically, it's this comprehensive guide. It's an audio program, and it teaches people skills that they need to better advocate for themselves. I think a lot of times, before you're diagnosed, you know how to communicate with people, but once you hear that diagnosis, everything goes out the window. And so it's done through real-life stories, and it's very easy to listen to, so it's not like getting a whole bunch of booklets. It's all audio, and it covers basic skills that you need, and then it also covers some special topics like how to pay for care or living beyond cancer. And so you can get it from our website, which is canceradvocacy.org/toolbox.
And is it applicable to every age group, or is it more of a generalized sort of roadmap or a navigation guide?
Well, so the way that it's done is through different individual stories, and we try to be pretty thorough in the different types of stories that we include. So there definitely are young adult stories. It sort of runs the gamut. We want to make sure that we have representations for, you know, the vast majority of people.
Got it. And how many have you given out so far?
So the program, actually, last year was its Cancerversary, and we've given out hundreds of thousands of them now. And we used to have them on cassette back in the old days.
Wow.
And now they're available on CD as well as podcasts.
Wow, you should put them on vinyl just for good measure.
That's next.
So just wrapping up real quick, because it's the spotlight. Tonight's show is about legislation, and I know that NCCS has a lot of great relationships with a lot of members of Congress, and every time you do a Ribbon of Hope, the whole place is filled up with congressional leadership. How are you guys, if you are at all, trying to influence or raise awareness for the young adult issues within the panoply of ridiculousness that is politics in D.C.?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, our biggest concept right now is care planning, and we have a piece of legislation, the Comprehensive Cancer Care Improvement Act, H.R. 1844, and so it basically provides reimbursement for physicians to provide patients with a written treatment plan, a treatment summary, and a follow-up care plan. And although the legislation's not aimed at young adults, it's aimed at Medicare physicians. Medicare is the sort of gold standard. So once Medicare starts paying for things, then other insurance companies start to follow suit. So it's something that definitely has the ability to significantly impact the care that young adults with cancer receive.
Well, there you go. And I guess my last question for you is, and you don't have to answer this per se, but are you liking Obama's pitch right now for healthcare reform, or are you critical of it and think it could use some more work?
Well, you know, it's tough. I think that the system is so broken and so many people are unhappy that it's going to be a challenge to come up with something that, you know, people are going to be able to agree on. I think shooting really hard for that is a good goal.
Well, I really thank you for being on the show. We love to have you on. NCCS, like I said, one of my favorite organizations. The website is canceradvocacy.org. And will we be seeing you in Austin?
Yes.
Yay.
You just made my year. All right. Ann Willis, thank you so much. Congratulations on your 12-year Cancerversary. Wish you all the best.
Thanks, Ann.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Ann Willis, everybody, from the National Coalition for Cancer Survivorship. Alrighty, and on to our next guest.
We're going hopping, hopping, we're going hopping.
Okay, Molly Daniels is the Vice President for Field Advocacy at the American Cancer Society's Cancer Action Network, the advocacy affiliate of the American Cancer Society. In that role, she heads up a team that oversees the organization's federal grassroots efforts, as well as state and local campaigns. She also oversees all advocacy training for volunteers across the country. Her team provides policy, campaign, and grassroots support and counsel virtually all of the organization's advocacy activities. Please welcome to the show. My pleasure to welcome Molly Daniels.
Hey, guys.
Hello, Molly. Welcome aboard.
Hi there. Hey, listen, thanks for having me on, you guys.
We are so excited, and Carol's chomping at the bit to get this going right away.
Okay.
Hey,
Holly, Carol.
How you doing?
Good. I'm really glad to be with you guys. It was great listening to Ann talk about what they're doing. You know, it just really is inspiring listening to these stories.
Well, you guys are doing such an amazing job at ACS CAN, and I just want to dive into talking about policy and kind of tap your policy brain. And I want to start off with the first question, which is, what exactly is policy and healthcare policy? That's a word that we hear tossed around so often, but I think sometimes as patients, we don't totally understand what policy and legislation and laws have to do with our cancer care. So connect the dots for us.
Well, you know what? It's a question I get all the time, Carol. And fortunately, I get it less than I used to. But when I first came on board, a lot of people said, I don't understand what politics and politicians have to do with cancer. You know, why is cancer a political issue? And the truth is just that there's a lot of laws and social policy that affect cancer patients, whether it's at the state level or at the federal level. And that's what we spend a lot of time on, whether it's health care reform, which you guys were just asking Ann about, or whether it's a smoke-free law in the state of Texas. So it runs the gamut from local community legislation to big-time federal legislation like what we're talking about in health care reform. One of the challenges I see is people just get intimidated by the process. I don't know if you guys see that when you're talking to people on your show. Once people realize they can share their stories, and that's what legislators need to hear, it becomes really easy, and it breaks down some of the myths and some of the intimidation.
So let's take an example that we can walk through. If some kind of legislation, maybe there's something that has affected young adults, some kind of legislation that you know of that might affect young adults with cancer, can you talk to us a little bit about like what the problem was, how people went about solving it, what kind of legislation was passed, the sort of success story so that we can see really tangibly what are these policies that are affecting our lives and how do we make
yeah,
change?
Yeah, it's a great question, and one that comes to mind is a law we worked on last year called Michelle's Law, and it's named after a student at Plymouth State University in New Hampshire. She was diagnosed with colon cancer. But she had to stay a full-time student while she was undergoing chemo in order to stay on her family's insurance. And, it just was awful for her, and she ultimately lost her battle to the disease. And it started with her mom. Her mom was just really angry, that obviously, that this had to happen, took it to the state legislature in New Hampshire, and then started talking to federal lawmakers. We got involved. And I don't know if you know, we have a program called Colleges Against Cancer, which is all over the country. It's students who work on local relays, but they're also getting more and more involved in advocacy. And they took this on. They sent over 10,000 emails in support of the legislation. It was signed last year by President Bush, and it actually goes into effect next week. And it will allow some seriously ill college students to take up to 12 months medical leave from school, without risking being dropped from their parents' health insurance plan.
Wow,
really
Bush
needed.
Actually did something we could be proud of.
it's a really important law, and it started at a very personal level with a student in New Hampshire, and it has grown to a federal law that will impact thousands. What's interesting about this law is that it moved fairly quickly, because as you guys know, legislation can take years and years, even decades. So it was a big hole that Congress got it together and fixed.
So it sounds like, to me, a lot of the things that we complain about in our daily lives, about getting access to health insurance or about how our cancer care actually runs administratively, a lot of these things hinge on laws and policies.
No question. And I think that's why you're seeing so much attention on health care reform, because you guys know the statistics. There are millions of people not only uninsured but underinsured. They think they have insurance, then they get a cancer diagnosis only to find out that they don't have the kind of insurance they need to. So they're not only fighting the disease, they're fighting with health insurers. So it's really important to us, and we are spending a whole lot of energy working on health care reform with this Congress and this administration.
So passing laws that will sort of help regulate the kinds of loopholes that insurance companies can or can't make?
Absolutely. I mean, insurance companies, you know, may turn people down because they have a pre-existing condition or charge people more because of their health status.
Sure,
so we're really hopeful that,
yeah.
I'm sorry?
I know we can
we're all
relate
with
that.
Yeah,
so this, if this legislation is done right, it has a chance to really stop a lot of those bad practices, and we're really hopeful. That's why we're so invested in it.
So talk a little, you know, you guys are a branch of the American Cancer Society, and ACS CAN stands for
right.
American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. So tell
right.
us about what kind of action you guys are taking that's reaching out to younger people, to people in their 20s and 30s.
Well, we're doing a lot of this social networking that you guys are so familiar with that I have had to become familiar with. You can follow us on Twitter at ACSCAN. We now mobilize volunteers through our texting campaign. You can text REFORM, REFORM, at 73585 to get on our mobile action network and get urgent action alerts.
Can you say
you
that
can,
one more time just so folks can write it down if they want to?
Yeah, I'd be happy to, Carol. You can text REFORM, REFORM, to 73585, and this will get you on our mobile action network so you can receive urgent action alerts. You can join us on Facebook by going to acscan.org/Facebook, and it'll directly link you to our cause page, which is Winning the War on Cancer Requires Healthcare Reform. But the other important thing that I would share with you guys is one of the biggest impacts we think we've had on the whole discussion of healthcare reform is just urging lawmakers to look at the issue through the cancer lens. So one of the things we've been doing is connecting people with stories, much like the story Ann was just sharing, with lawmakers. And there's nothing quite like, you guys know this, there's nothing quite like putting a face on an issue and having a constituent go in and say, here's my story, or sending that email or making that phone call. It's had an enormous impact, and I think you're seeing the president, you're seeing a lot of legislators talk about cancer patients as they're talking about the need for healthcare reform.
So say a little bit more about, like, if we go on your Facebook page or text the number that you just told us about, what happens? What are the kinds of alerts? What are the actions? What are the steps that people do when they become involved with you?
Well, we're going to try to keep you involved by keeping you up to date on our – we send out a lot of emails to folks to keep them up to date on what's going on. We encourage at different strategic points in the political process, we ask folks to send a letter or make a phone call or send an email. And it's really about just a lot of communication so that people can feel like they're in the loop on what's happening on Capitol Hill. So we
so
will,
all
if,
sort of like
people
towards Capitol Hill and how to get in touch with our representatives.
In this, yeah, in this particular campaign it is. But again, we do a lot of stuff at the state level too. Whether it's a tobacco text campaign, whether it's a smoke-free campaign, whether it's getting screenings for people so that the state requires insurers to cover mammograms, for instance. So, you know, we'd love to pull in your listeners. We think we're doing some exciting things. We're getting more and more people involved. I talked about Colleges Against Cancer, and one of the programs that they're starting this year is something called Young Alumni, so that those kids, after they're done with college, can go into this new program and still be involved. And what's exciting to me is seeing young people want to get involved in the legislative process and want to get
a little bit more, like, some of the examples that you just gave of, like, screenings for mammograms, which are amazing and so important that people have access to it, but it's really our mothers and grandmothers who need that kind of access because a 23-year-old is not going to, you know, find their breast cancer detected through a mammogram. So talk to us a little bit about, like, what are some of the issues that you're talking about now or that you're sending out alerts on that are really going to hit home to people who are in their 20s and 30s. Like, the things
well,
that are going to get us riled up. What,
okay,
what
well,
us to do now?
I think a lot of younger people are real interested in smoke-free laws. They want to be able to – part of it is they want to be able to go into a bar and not have it be hazy with smoke. But the other thing I can tell you is that smoke-free laws cut down on teenagers picking up smoking. The same is true for tobacco taxes. If the tobacco tax is raised in a particular state – less people pick up cigarettes.
And what kinds of things regarding health care reform, because that's a word that we just keep hearing over and over again, and it's so timely and so salient, what kind of health care reform actions are you taking now that might be really gripping
well,
listeners?
The truth is that a lot of young people aren't insured, and they think they're not vulnerable. But you guys, I heard Matthew talking about the statistics on cancer, over 65,000 people in the age bracket that's your listeners, you know, are going to get cancer. And healthcare reform is going to urge younger people to get insurance. It's a big problem right now. A lot of the uninsured and underinsured are young people.
So, Matthew, you had a question that you wanted to ask.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that the American Cancer Society has done exceptionally well is the smoking cessation campaigns over the last couple of decades.
Yeah.
Is the you may or may not be aware, but recently the news has now officially come out. The World Health Organization, the CDC, has now conflated that tanning salons have as much risk for cancer as smoking. But, of course, the tanning salon population is largely my generation, the youth culture.
Yeah, yeah.
Does the ACS have a position, or are you planning to formulate one for a national campaign about stop tanning, you're white enough, and give it up?
You know what, Matthew, I'm glad you asked the question, because it's an issue that is becoming much more prevalent in a lot of localities around the country. We don't have a national campaign on it yet, but we are definitely working on it in a number of states. And if you or your listeners will go to acscan.org, you can find out more information about that. It's a great question.
Yeah, I often feel like, taking some sort of really disgusting cancer sticker, like, you know, the lung cancer commercials where it just shows, like, this piece of lung in a dish?
Oh, yeah.
And just putting them, like, all over tanning salons.
Yeah.
For no other reason than to disgruntle the people that own them. Because I don't know. The end of my question will bring Carol back for a second. But do you have any thoughts on the narcissism in my generation, why tanning is so relevant, and how there's going to be a way to, you know, this invulnerability, this invincibility complex?
Talk about that a little more, Matthew. I want to make sure I understand your question.
Well, the notion of young adults are the most likely age group to get misdiagnosed or to not take themselves seriously enough to consider, self-exam or seeing their doctors routinely, and the lack of insurance, you know, is basically a barrier for them to even think about caring about it.
Right, and especially in this economy when it's harder to get jobs, and it's harder to get jobs where there are benefits like health insurance. It's a real problem. Absolutely.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that often lawmakers say, oh, these young adults who are, you know, these young invincibles who don't think that they need, you know, have the need for insurance. Well, we know that we want and need insurance. We just can't afford it. And that's
right.
Why it's so great that you guys are advocating for us. So as we wrap up, I'm wondering if you can just tell folks again where they can go to your website to get involved and learn more about the specifics of what you guys are going through.
I'd love everybody to go to our website, which is acscan.org, or Twitter us at acscan. And again, I'll go back to texting reform to 73585. And we're on Facebook at acscan.org/Facebook.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for having us, for having, you know, your information and knowledge for our listeners on the show. I mean, it's just so important that folks start to get involved and take action beyond just, you know, thinking about the science of cancer and how we can change the science. We need to be changing the laws, too.
Yeah, I really appreciate you guys letting me come on. I really enjoyed it.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
All
You're
right.
Doing good stuff.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, Molly Daniels, everybody. All righty, now it's time for our next guest. Okay. Duncan Cross has had Crohn's disease for 15 years. In that time, he has taken tens of thousands of pills, been in the hospital dozens of times, undergone several surgeries, and participated in 3 clinical trials. 3 years ago, surgeons removed his colon, leading to the remission of his disease. Just over a year ago, he decided to use his excess energy to start blogging about illness, health, and healthcare. One of the nation's most profound writers in the blogosphere. Please welcome to the Stupid Cancer Show, ladies and gentlemen, Duncan Cross.
Duncan.
Hello, my friend.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me on.
Real honor, my friend. We're huge fans.
Great.
We're so glad to have you here. And I'm looking at how short our time is and how vast your knowledge is. So we're just going to, like, totally throw questions at you.
Okay, fire them up.
Left and right. So, so we're just going to push this conversation along so we can get as much out of you as we can.
All right.
So the first question I have for you is, you know, you went through this horrible experience. You know, I mean, boy, young adults, we do not have the corner on the market of, like, suffering and disease and illness. You know, you there are all kinds of folks with other diseases, too. And you had colitis, and you plowed through that. And towards the end of your care most recently, you know, you went through this experience where you had all these clinical issues and clinical problems, the things that we have wrong with our body and the things that we go to the doctor for. But after you sort of graduated through the clinical side of things, you started recognizing that there are other problems that you were facing beyond just the physical clinical issues. Can you talk to us a little bit about what you started realizing about the social issues that were going on in your life and the changes that need to be made?
Yeah, of course. I was diagnosed when I was 17, I first had symptoms when I was 16. For a long time, my disease was in more or less under control. But starting in about 2003, I just got really, really sick, and that led up to having my colon removed in 2006. And you know, the surgeon, when he was trying to sell me this operation, because, of course, I didn't want it. You know, I didn't want to live with an appliance. And he told me, you know, this is going to cure your disease. You're going to be cured of Crohn's disease. And I thought, you know, all the stuff that I associated with being sick, you know, with difficulties with insurance and prescriptions and all that stuff, you know, I thought that was going to go away. And so I went through the operation, and it was a dramatic change in sort of the pathology and the symptoms of my disease. I mean, I definitely have a lot more energy. I don't feel sick all the time. But at the same time, I'm not healthy the way sort of a normal person would consider themselves healthy. I still have health issues. I still take medicines. I still see a lot of doctors. And a lot of the things that I sort of assumed would go away once I'd had the surgery were still problems. And I started realizing that a lot of the things that I had assumed were just sort of intrinsic to the clinical manifestation of my disease, a lot of the things that I thought were just biological, were in fact social problems, political problems, legal problems, administrative problems. And I started paying a lot more attention to this latter general category and thinking about, you know, how can these things change? How does this affect my experience with illness? And once I started thinking about it, I wanted to talk about it. I wanted to write about it. And that's how I ended up blogging about it.
Well, I want to dive straight into the meat of one of the matters that you write a lot about on your blog, and that is the current healthcare reform. And we hear that word healthcare reform, this, that, and other, tossed around. But I want to talk about, you know, when it comes down to it, young adults make up half of the uninsured population in the United States, people in their 20s and 30s. And no matter how many people say that young adults just don't want health insurance, I don't believe it's true. I think that we can't afford it. It's too expensive, and that's why we don't have access to it. So I want to talk about the public option. Educate us about what your perspective on the public option is. Help define what that means, because I think that there have been so many myths tossed around about this and that. Just give us sort of public option 101 and what the pros and cons are.
Okay. Yeah.
Specifically.
Well, the public option is basically a compromise. There are a number of people in this country who think that a single-payer system similar to Canada is the best way to go. There are a number of people who think that sort of a market-based reform is the way to go. And the public option was proposed as sort of a compromise position between the two of these. And sort of the very basic idea is that, you know, if private insurance is so great compared to public programs, then this would be a way for the private insurance to compete directly against a public program. So the government would establish, would give seed money to basically a quasi-government insurance plan that people would buy into. It would pay for itself with premium money, so it wouldn't be something that taxpayers would pay for, but the people who actually enroll in it pay for it.
Can I stop you right there?
Yeah.
Thing that people say, oh, this is it's going to cost too much. Have you crunched the numbers, and do you think that it's possible for people paying into the system to cover the cost of it?
Well, I mean, that's the big experiment, right? I think it's possible. I think there's potentially a trick to it, in that it may attract people who are tired of their private insurance, which is going to be the people who are sicker. So there's some problem of adverse selection. I mean, I've been pretty ill for a while. I'm really tired of my private insurance. I've had a couple of insurance companies over the last few years. They've just been endlessly frustrating when I get really sick. And personally, I would be the first in line for a public option. The problem, and I'm not sure that anybody has really sort of thought this through, but maybe I'm wrong on that, is that, you know, if a lot of people like me, if a lot of people who are dealing with their insurance companies on a weekly or monthly basis, and because they're ill, bail on private insurance and go to the public option, it may end up being more popular with sick people than with the healthy people, which would then create a bit of a problem. But the logic behind the plan is that private insurance includes a lot of money for overhead and marketing and profits that a public plan wouldn't do. I mean, Medicare is sort of the quintessential public plan, right? Nobody was giving private insurance. Nobody was selling private insurance to seniors because they were all broke. They all had a lot of diseases, and so the government, you know, about 40 years ago, created Medicare to be sort of a public plan for elderly people. And since then, no private insurers have stepped up and said, we want to compete against Medicare to get this business. And Medicare is able to do what it does with a significantly lower overhead than most private insurance. In fact, all private insurance plans are able to do. So the idea is that the public option, by avoiding these excess costs that don't go directly to care,
like $24 million a year for salaries for an executive.
Exactly. These sorts of things, like big glossy ads, like marketing and stuff like that. Like all of this sort of excess cost, by putting that money back into care, the idea is that the public option could charge less for premiums and deliver a better value for its customers.
Well, I have a question. You said that the public option would be so attractive to people like you and me who are actually either critically sick or have pre-existing conditions or have maintenance care that's very expensive and that private insurers don't want to cover us. I've been so surprised that every cancer organization I know of, that no one is stepping up to the plate and saying we support the public option. They say we support healthcare reform, but that doesn't really mean anything. Anybody can say that.
Right.
All they want to do is healthcare reform. You know what? Why do you think that no cancer organization that I know of has stepped forward to say we support a public option?
Well, I think part of it is a misunderstanding about what the public option is. The people who are opposed to the public option are portraying this as a government takeover of the healthcare system, of the insurance market. And the fact is that in sort of the most ambitious of the bills that are currently under consideration, the public option would only be available to a very small subset of people who basically only be available to people who can't get insurance any other way. So I think a lot of people are sort of misunderstanding the scope of this proposal. It's actually rather modest. The second thing is that I think this is seen as being too political a stance to take. It's widely associated with sort of liberals, and that's become a bit of a bugaboo, I guess. And so there's some concern, I think, in these organizations that they would alienate people by taking too liberal a position on the reform. I mean, one of the things that those of us that are interested in this issue, that are talking about it, that are trying to advocate about it, is One of the problems is that this is a very muddy debate. There's a lot of misinformation, misunderstanding going around. There are a lot of really complicated ideas. I mean, it's not just that there are sort of bad ideas floating around, but some of these ideas that have been discussed are kind of complicated and nuanced, and it just sort of defies the amount of attention that most people have for these kinds of discussions.
I think that it's so ironic that that cancer organizations are concerned about alienating their constituents when, in fact, their constituents are the most sick, the most
affected
from, it's interesting. I know Matthew has a question.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, everything you say, I have 10 things to respond to. I agree with everything that you're saying. This is a sort of a throwaway, but the cure to your Crohn's was to remove your colon, right?
Right. Well, so cure is sort of a matter of degree.
I think. But that's what I'm saying. Like if my arm hurt, the cure to my arm not hurting is to cut it off. I think
that's
such a ridiculous, solution to problems. But that notwithstanding, my personal belief, and I'm happy to say that I2A takes a full stand for the public option because we believe that health care is a right, and that so long as it is in the hands of a system that is based on profit and not ethics, no one will ever win. So with that said, and coupled with all the other stuff that the young adult population is the most likely to not be able to afford or have access to health care, or if you do have it, you're underinsured, pre-existing condition clauses and whatnot, and that something like two-thirds of all medical bankruptcies are people under 40. So with all that said that I just really wanted to get out of me, I know you were listening to the American Cancer Society lady before us. She didn't really seem to take a stand on anything except, and I say this with love, but whatever their agenda is. And I'm not really convinced that they're going to be as effective as I would like them to be in terms of truly getting what needs to get done. The last thing I'll say is that something like, I'm making this now, Ellen DeGeneres once said that 42% of all statistics are made up on the spot, so I'm just going to make one up right now. And that is something
Matthew,
like...
you are so bad.
So two-thirds of all Americans are in favor of the public option, but none of them know what it means. And I think the idea is just that people feel that there is an entitlement, that you shouldn't have to pay to be well. So at the end, so my question, after all that, my question is, should I be hopeful, or will the 30% of the nutbags out there that are getting 90% of the attention are going to ruin it for all of us?
Well, I think you can be hopeful. That's sort of the theme of this administration, and I wouldn't want to rain on their parade. I mean, even if the public option doesn't pass, I mean, God forbid, but even if it doesn't come to that, the sort of the basic package of reform that a lot of people seem to agree on is pretty aggressive and pretty transformative, in that it would make it it would basically open up the private market to people that are not able to get insurance. It would make insurance more affordable. It would make it required in most circumstances. So I mean, even if the public option doesn't pass, I think there's good reason to be optimistic. As far as the public option itself, I don't honestly know. I mean, it seems like it could go either way at this point. It's one of those weird things. Like, if you call people and say, do you support the public option, you get a much lower response rate than if you call them and explain sort of, okay, this is what a public option is, and they say, oh, that's a great idea. Most of them think that's a good idea. But I think a lot of people just, don't quite grasp what the idea is and why it would work and why it makes sense. And I mean, one in an ideal society, one would look to our legislators to be sort of the leading edge of this and to do a better job of understanding these issues. But we go we have the society we have and the legislators we have, and some of them are sort of, I mean, deliberately ignorant about this, and they've made it sort of one of them, I think maybe Olympia Snow, has said that there's no way, the public option is ever going to make it, and whether she, they can back that up, remains to be seen. But I think you can still be hopeful in general.
What is it that we can't? I mean, I think one of the most hopeful things The most empowered I have ever felt is when I made a promise to myself to quit bitching about my lack of access to care and start doing something about it. And I was like, I'm only going to do really tangible actions. I'm going to shut my mouth and stop fetching and make a difference. And when I try to do that, it's like you go on these websites and people are like, tell your story, sign an internet petition, write your story online, you know, make a phone call, put a letter into the editor. What of that is actually effective? What if you were going to prioritize, like, the best, most important things you can do to make a difference and be heard? What is it?
Call your legislator.
That's more important than like signing a petition.
Yeah. I mean, there's probably a dozens of petitions floating around out there. I know I've signed at least three. And I don't know that any of them has made that much of a difference. But, I mean, legislators, people in Congress, they depend on votes. And the thing that they listen to the most is, people from their districts who have a position on these issues. If, if an issue, if they're getting a lot of calls one way or another on an issue, if they know it's going to be popular or unpopular in their home district, there's really no amount of lobbying or money that can change their minds, because they know, come 2-6 years from now, they're going to have to go before those same voters and defend that decision, and so that's effective. And you don't even have to know who your legislators are. If you call the Capitol switchboard and just say, "This is where I live," they will figure out who your legislators are. Everybody has three: two senators and a member of Congress, a representative. And you can spend about 10 minutes and just go through each one of those. And all you have to do is talk to their staff assistant. That's the person who answers the phones, and say, I want to express my support for the public option. And they'll write down your name and maybe your address or zip code, and they'll pass that information on to the member of Congress. And that's really, that's the first thing you should do, but it's also the most effective. From there,
I think it's important too when you call to let them know if you're a cancer patient or something.
Right. Yeah.
Family,
yeah.
Cancer and
And from there, I mean, once you've done that, there are a lot of things that you can do that are sort of not going to be as effective, but if you have the energy for them, I mean, they're definitely good ways to do them. I mean, telling your story is important, I think. But I mean, I think a lot of us. And I know this is true for me. A lot of us have friends that, who have said, when you're sick, just give me a call if you need anything, or, stuff like, people that sort of our support network. If I were to, these would be the people that I would done if I were going to try and raise money or something like that for an advocacy organization. And going to those people and saying, this is important to me. This is an issue that affects my life. Talking to them about, this is why it's important, and trying to, talking to them about, getting behind it, about having them call their members of Congress and express their support.
But how effective is that? I want to jump in here. I'm a deeply rooted, cynical New York Jew, and I don't believe in anything in D.C., for that matter. I went through this legislation training thing where they taught you how to walk and talk and do the elevator thing. They're real people, they have lives, but have they just been so matrixed in their universes where they have no clue what's really going on, and how do you really actually influence them? Just respond to my utter jadedness, please.
Well, I think,
he just said it when he said that votes matter. I mean, they want to be elected. That's the bottom line. These folks want to be reelected.
I think your jadedness is somewhat justified. There's sort of a level at which you can get into this stuff and be very optimistic and sort of have your just have your hopes and dreams crushed. But I think if you go into it sort of guardedly optimistic, you can do a lot. And just understand that this is a process, and there are people who are pretty powerful who oppose it, and you're not going to win it with one phone call. It's something that requires perseverance, but they will listen. They do listen to their voters. That is, they're out of office, and that for most of them is the most important thing, and sometimes they just do the right thing with a minimum amount of prodding, and it works. I don't know if you guys paid attention to this, but last year something called the ADA Restoration Amendment passed, Act passed. And this was basically a law that virtually nobody lobbied for, but basically restored broad protections. I think my understanding is that it even applies to people with cancer, that they would be covered by the Americans with Disabilities Act. And that's
people with cancer in the workplace. Like everybody who's listening now and needs to go back to work when your chemo and radiation is done, this is huge.
Yeah.
Because it enables you to have all sorts of accommodations based on chemo brain and limitations due to your radiation and all of
and
these
also for education or for you know if you want to use public facilities or any sort of anything like that. I mean, this is this has the potential to really change a lot of lives for the better. And this is something that Congress did. And as far as I can tell, there wasn't a lot of advocacy. There wasn't a lot of demand for it. Tom Harkin, senator from Iowa, looked at how the law had been interpreted, the 1990 Americans with Disabilities Act, how that had been interpreted by the courts. And he said, you know, the courts have gotten this entirely wrong. They've misunderstood what we wanted it to say. We're going to go back and we're going to fix this. And we're going to make it right. And there was some lobbying from chambers of commerce and stuff like that. I mean, to try and stall this. But it passed. And it's the law of the land as of January of this year. I mean, it matters. And it's a good thing, I think, that we can be, you know, we can point to as something that our Congress did correctly. So I mean, there is the potential for positive change. In this case, though, the opposition is. Tremendous, and it requires a lot of perseverance, a lot of activism, and on our parts, I mean, a willingness. I think I know this is true for people with Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, but maybe not so much for cancer. But you know, we have a very embarrassing disease, and it's hard for us to talk about it. But the more we can talk about it and say, you know, this is how this impacts my life, and be upfront and sort of explicit about what we need from a healthcare system, I think the more people will understand and see what needs to be done, and the more effective we will be as advocates.
Well said, Duncan. I think that if we as cancer patients have the audacity to believe that hopping on our bicycle or putting on our shoes and taking a stroll is going to do jack to change cancer, that one of those actions are going to do anything to find a cure, if we can have hope enough to think that riding our bike is going to find the cure for cancer, we don't have any reason to think that picking up the phone and calling one of our representatives can't help change the way that healthcare is run in the United States. I mean, I think that we've got to look at how we can make a difference in all of these arenas.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just the calling, I mean, it's so easy. The people that you talk to, I mean, even if you hate your representative, even if they're completely on the opposite side of the issue from you, the people that you talk to are unfailingly polite. That's what they get paid to do. They're very nice. They'll write down your name or your address or whatever, and they'll take that. It takes you maybe 10 minutes, to get all three done, and it's just so it can be so effective. I mean, like I said, there's other things. You can write letters. You can, get involved with some of the organizations like Healthcare for America Now or Organizing for America that are active on this and doing more, advocacy work. But the basic thing is just to get those calls in and to make sure that your elected officials know how you feel about this and know that it matters to you as a cancer survivor, as a young adult, as somebody with an illness, whatever it means.
So, Duncan, before we leave, two things. One, do you have the number for the switchboard?
Yeah, I thought there was an 800 number, but I looked at it briefly and couldn't find it. But, everybody has free long distance,
yeah,
so it's the number is area code 202-224-3121. I'll give that again. It's 202-224-3121. And you'll just call, and if you know who your representatives are, you can ask for them by name. If you don't, you just say, you know, I live here. Can you tell me who my representative and senators are? And they'll find a way to patch you through.
And like I said, it's so easy. You just, I mean, the people on the other end of the phone are just extremely nice, and you don't have to be an expert on policy. You don't have to be Duncan Cross.
Right.
Just tell them what your experience is and what it is that you want them to vote for. And some more information for our listeners, your website address. I'd love for people to jump on board and start reading your blog and giving you their thoughts and opinions. What's your URL?
Yeah, it's duncancross.net. That's DUNCANCROSS, all one word, .net. And I've got a lot of posts about, you know, all sorts of aspects of healthcare reform. My search tool is a pretty easy way to get to that stuff.
Exciting. It can be very daunting as a patient to, you know, think, oh, this world of politics and policy, where I enter, how will I ever understand it? But your website is just incredibly welcoming, down to earth, and just such a great resource.
Yeah, and I'm happy to answer emails as well. My email address is there on the site, but it's just dx@duncancross.net. And you know, it's easy enough for me to respond to specific questions via email. And I'm happy to do it.
Well, thanks for your generosity and for being on the show, and it's great.
Great, I've enjoyed being here.
Yeah, you know, we did a show a couple of months ago called "Any Young Adult Disease Sucks," and I think you're a shining example of, you know, how our generation is really trying to, you know, grab the man by the balls and just do what we can in our intelligent, rebellious nature to really change the system. So, congratulations for all that you do. You're a brilliant writer, and it was an honor to have you on the show.
As a matter of fact, I listened to that show. That was the first Stupid Cancer show I listened to.
Oh, yeah, okay.
When I was preparing, after Carol asked me to come on, and I listened to it, and it was great, and I was like, yeah, this is really something I could do, and I've really enjoyed it, so thanks.
Well, we'd love to have you back, surely
great.
Not the last time, so good luck
great.
To you.
Great, look forward to it. Thanks.
All right, Duncan Cross, everybody. Let's say goodbye. Here we go.
Bye.
Take care, bro.
You too.
All right, so that's our show, guys.
Yay!
Any big plans this week? I'm going to Dallas for a conference tomorrow.
I'm going to D.C. on Sunday.
Yeah, there's a
Jack's Mannequin concert.
We're
going
to invade Jack's Mannequin. Carol, you back
I'm
to Chicago?
I'm week with my phone glued to my ear, calling the Capitol. How could I not after listening to Duncan? That's all I'm doing this week is calling my representatives.
You know, let's work on a beat down the man brochure. Who would have called?
Why am I nervous right now?
Yeah, I know.
Well, I'm really curious. Actually, why don't we just sort of toss this out as a goal to anybody who's listening and wants to make this phone call to the Capitol? Let's check in next week with each other. I mean, if the host of the Stupid Cancer Show can't get this done, then there's a problem. So why don't we kind of make a pact that we'll all make a call this week and see who else is listening is going to check back in with us next week and make a call too.
All right. I'm down with that.
Excellent.
All right, guys. Well, thanks again for another phenomenal show. And now it's time for our closing sequence.
Prepare to activate.
I hear there's rumors on the internets.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
And so, to all of you, a fond farewell.
Hooray, I'm helping.
You are a meathead.
Oh, Magoo, you've done it again.
That was so terrible, I think you gave me cancer.
All right, folks, that's tonight's show. I hope you had as much fun as we did poking a stick at Stupid Cancer.
Love.
I'd like to thank our guests, Duncan Cross, Ann Willis,
and
Molly Daniels.
Come aboard.
Next week's show, it is the beginning of
We're
the pink.
Yes, finally.
Pink nausea. Stupid breast cancer with Survivor Spotlight Stephanie
Life's
LaRue. Janine Guglielmo from Living Beyond
Life
Breast Cancer.
Moves.
Jenna Glazer from the Young Survival Coalition.
It's
going to be a hell of a show. If you missed any of our previous broadcasts, check out the archive at stupidcancershow.com or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes at itunes.i2y.com. If you don't already have Carol's book, Everything Changes, The Insider's Guide to Cancer in Your 20s and 30s, it's available wherever books are sold. Remember, if it's not stupid, it's not cancer. We'll see you all back here next week, my friends, live from the chemo deck. Jack Bouvard. Carol Rosenthal, Captain Stubby, and I wish you all a great evening. Go to bed, Dana. Bogger out.